Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Well, happy weekend and welcome to another Focus on Community. I'm Frank Rush. By the way, if you miss any part of today's show, you can't listen to all of it. That's okay. You'll find it posted as a podcast on our website. Today, we're going to address the COVID-19 pandemic, but from a little bit different angle than what you might normally think. One of the folks, one of the businesses here in the state of Indiana that has, and really around the nation, that has been affected by this is the funeral homes, the funeral directors. They've had a lot to deal with because of the pandemic. So we went to the person who would know about that here in Indiana, and that's Andy Clayton with the Indiana Funeral Directors Association. Andy, how are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing great, Frank. Thank you.
I thought I'd mention the person that actually held the president's job, the first one in 1881, was Isaac Ball from here in Terre Haute.
Yep. Mr. Ball holds a special place here at IFDA. When you walk in the front door, the first picture you see is his.
Wow. And you've got ties to the Wabash Valley yourself, even though you're in Indianapolis now with the association. Your family reaches all the way back here to Terre Haute and even Greene County, too, right?
Yeah, I'm a second-generation funeral director. My mother is a 1965 graduate of Gershmeyer High School, and it lived over in Terre Haute. My grandfather owned a tire company there, and my dad is from down in Greene County in Jasonville. And actually, my mom and dad met at my grandmother's funeral, and my mom thought he was kind of cute. And as the story is told, she went home and fixed him a couple bologna sandwiches, took it back up to Patrick J. Ryan Funeral Home, and the rest of it's history 53 years later.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. How does one, I want to get into the COVID thing and how this is fake, but how does one, and I'm sure a lot of people have asked this question before, how does one actually get to be a funeral director? And let's face it, I'm not trying to be mean, but it's not necessarily a profession that's cut out for everybody.
It's not. And if you'll, Frank, if you'll look at the history of funeral service, it tends to be generational within a family. And our funeral service in the 21st century has really evolved over the last 100-plus years with the industrialization of the United States. And honestly, for me personally, I'm a son of a funeral director. My dad was first generation. And the person that impacted his life the most when he was a young man was the funeral director there in Jasonville, Max McClanahan. And at 8 years old, my dad lost his best friend, which was his grandfather, my great-grandfather. And very suddenly to a heart attack, and our family was very distraught. And the only person that took the time to explain this to an 8-year-old little boy was the local funeral director. And it made such an impression on my dad that when he was 15, he went back up to McClanahan Funeral Home there in Jasonville and asked Mr. McClanahan for a job, of which he granted him that. And my grandmother drove him up to Terre Haute and bought him a suit and some wingtips, and Dad showed up for work, and first thing he did was mow the grass. And I think that story could be retold time and again amongst funeral directors in Indiana, but or across the nation for that matter. But it really is, funeral directors have a servant's heart, and they are stewards of the community, and they're tireless, they are unselfish, and they give of themselves at all hours of the day. It takes a special kind of person, and I would not be forthright if I didn't tell you there's a lot of burnout in what we do because we never turn off. And it is a challenge, especially in this day and age of where the world moves so fast. And I think this pandemic has revealed that and revealed how challenging it can be when we're told to stop or be on pause.
One of the things about it as a funeral director, you are entrusted with taking care of a family's loved one, but you also have to take care of the family during probably one of the most difficult times in their life. How has the pandemic affected the services that you and funeral directors around the state and around the country, how's that affected you?
Well, I will tell you this, the pandemic has revealed one very important thing to us as caregivers, and that is, irregardless of what's going on in the world around us, when someone loses a loved one, they still want to honor that person in their way. And some of the restrictions that have been put on assemblies of persons here in Indiana over the last 4 months has not, it's affected funeral service. And we've had to tell families that we have to limit the number of people that are in our care at any one time, because as you alluded to and to your point, we not only are caring for the dead, but we're caring for the living, and we're doing this simultaneously. And the challenges that normal everyday life presented get magnified under such a time as this pandemic, and people don't like being told that things are going to be limited. And it's put funeral directors in a very tough position, because really they're only the conduit of the message. This is coming down from executive orders, perhaps local mandates from your state or your county health departments and health officers. And one of our core responsibilities as licensed funeral directors here in Indiana is we have to suppress the spread of infectious disease. It is a core competency that our licensing agency expects us to advocate for, is the suppression of this virus.
Wow. And one of the things, too, about this, and we talked about this before we actually started the program, and I don't think this is something that's necessarily specific to rural Indiana. It's probably across the country, except for major metropolitan areas. A lot of funeral directors, a lot of funeral homes, practicing social distancing is kind of hard because they're not that big in most cases.
No, they're not that big. And honestly, a funeral, and this has been well documented across the country. Fortunately, here in Indiana, we haven't had this, but funerals are a natural hotspot for the transmission of this virus, or what we know about this virus. The virus thrives in the air. It thrives in vapor droplets. And if you think about a funeral, we have crying, we have sneezing, we have coughing, we have hugging, we have close proximity of people consoling one another, reminiscing, perhaps laughing over a story about the deceased or an involvement with the deceased. And you compress all these people into these small, older funeral homes that maybe have been converted from homes. So naturally, they're just compartmentalized, if you will. It really can be a serious situation. In fact, in the state of Georgia, early in this pandemic response, there was several deaths that were traced back to two funerals in a rural Georgia town. And we tend to think in terms of worldly problems as being urban and big city. And trust me, I live here in Marion County, and we've got a tremendous COVID positive rate, and we lead the state in deaths. And that's natural because we're the highest density of population in the state. But this is not just an Indianapolis problem or a South Bend problem or a Terre Haute problem. It can hit Jacksonville. It can hit Linton. It can hit Sullivan, Duggar, Rochdale. I mean, Montezuma, you name it, Clinton. Although it may not be in big numbers in those areas, all it takes is one funeral. You have, let's say, 50 people coming from 25 different locations, perhaps in Illinois, maybe in Indiana, maybe as far away as California. You don't know who they've been exposed to. You don't know who they've talked with. You don't know what could have happened. And you put them all into a small little building with all of this emotion and the vapor. You could literally have everybody leave that facility and be impacted by COVID if it's not properly managed.
So how are funeral directors dealing with this? And are we seeing extended visitations? That way we don't have a large number of people at one point. I know that some places have gone to like virtual funerals. How are the funeral directors dealing with this?
Well, it certainly has tapped into our creative side. And that creative side also has to be in compliance with what our public health officials and our elected officials are expecting. And you hit on it. We're doing a lot more virtual services where we're live streaming, broadcasting, Facebook Live. And of course, I follow nearly every funeral home here in Indiana. I'm constantly seeing live funerals. I know of some funeral homes that are handing a mask to every person that walks through that door. They're opening doors for everybody. They're not letting the public open the door themselves. Some are taking temperature checks at the door, which is a little bit progressive, and still I think there's some reservation there because of liability. Some are signing the guest book as people come in and not letting them touch the pens. Others are, once the family's done signing the guest book and the guest signing the guest book, they wash the pen and put it back in the pen holder. There's a lot of creative ways that funeral homes are meeting the need and expectation of their families, and yet fulfilling that statutory responsibility of preventing the spread of infectious disease. And it's daily. It's ongoing. We are finding new creative ways of personal protective equipment that are out there to help them sanitize their funeral homes, from their bathrooms to their lounges to their door handles. The cleaning component has never been more important in a funeral home than it is right now. And not just a weekly cleaning, in some cases, the busier funeral homes, it's probably an hourly surface disinfection.
Wow. Now, one of the things about funeral homes, too, and this is something that maybe we don't necessarily like to point out a whole lot, but it's a business. And this new the pandemic and the new restrictions and requirements on funeral directors is going to put a pinch on how they do business because there's added expenses there. And then if we start getting into live streaming of funeral services and video, I mean, there's electronic equipment and stuff. There's a lot more of a cost involved there that a lot of folks and probably a lot of funeral directors didn't even think about a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we can't have this conversation without looking at the financial impact. I mean, if you kind of pull back away from the pandemic from our perspective and look at it through a much wider lens, there is a societal change in how we honor our death in this culture. And, you know, those, and I go back, I'll be 50 later this year. And when I was a kid at the funeral home, it was nothing. It was normal to have two nights of visitation and a funeral on the next day and then burial. And if we cared for 100 families a year, maybe one or two families would choose cremation. I fast forward 30 years, and in my little community that I lived in, 6 out of 10 people were choosing cremation. And certainly, so the economics of it for the funeral home has been already in a state of flux and change over the last 25 years, especially. You throw a pandemic into the middle of it, and you're families are even being forced to change their traditions because of restrictions put in place to help, you know, with the spread of the virus. And it does impact the funeral home. I haven't had personally a lot of funeral directors vent or lament to me about that. They're more concerned about keeping their community safe. They've got to, but it, you can't have this conversation without saying, hey, yes, it does impact the finances. And perhaps they were going to do a renovation this year that they've now postponed because they're having to buy personal protective equipment to protect themselves from the living, not just the dead. Because funeral homes, by and large, stock and inventory their personal protective equipment following OSHA standards to protect themselves from transmission of infectious disease from the deceased body to the embalmer or funeral director. Now, not only do we have to have personal protective equipment for that, but now to protect ourselves from the public. And we go on a first call to a home at 2 a.m. or we go to a hospice or a nursing home or a hospital. Again, we're looking at nearly half of Indiana deaths have taken place inside Indiana nursing homes. And I've got a feeling as they dive a little deeper, that number is going to get bigger here in Indiana. Well, a funeral director is walking right into that situation. They've got to protect themselves in the middle of the night. And the next day we turn around, we make arrangements with a family of that decedent who possibly could have been exposed to COVID and is in an incubation period. And what does that do to us? And it really, there's a lot of challenges here because we are really a hybrid profession. And what I mean by hybrid is that the Department of Homeland Security has labeled funeral service as essential. So there's a core competency here that what we do is essential, and that's caring for the dead. Now, we also have a social aspect of this, and that's the services that we conduct that are non-religious based. And we have to be mindful of the restrictions on the social gatherings while also honoring our fundamental statutory responsibilities as well. And it's a challenge because those aren't static right now. They're changing. You know, right now it's every couple of weeks things get modified or revised, but early in the pandemic it was like drinking from a fire hose for information about what was going on.
Andy Clayton, the president of the Indiana Funeral Directors Association, our guest today. I doubt seriously if we've gotten to the point yet where we are outrunning the capacity of funeral directors around the state, but we are seeing increased demand for their services. How much pressure is that putting on funeral directors to be able to keep up? I'm sure in some areas, especially around Marion County, there's probably some funeral directors that are kind of running ragged because they are in so much demand.
It's a great point that you make, Frank. And I will tell you this, we've been fortunate here in Indiana. We've if you've paid attention to the national media over the last 4 months, we know what New York went through. And we heard about how the care of the decedents was challenging to the local infrastructure there in New York. And we saw visions of semi-trailers that had cooling apparatuses in them. And fortunately here in Indiana, the number of deaths that we've experienced to this point, we've been able to handle it as funeral service collectively. Now, I will tell you, early in the pandemic here in Marion County, there were some stressful days for some of our members because they couldn't keep up and they didn't have the staff infrastructure to keep up. That has since dissipated. I'm fortunate to be on a work team through the governor's office that working with the Indiana National Guard, FEMA, Department of Homeland Security, the governor's office liaison, and the Indiana Coroners Association, we monitor the mortality rates in every county here in Indiana. And the counties are actually broken down into FEMA districts, which there's 10 of them. And we've done a census of cooling apparatuses throughout the state of Indiana, whether it be a morgue cooler, a funeral home cooler, a hospital cooler. And so we watch that in real time. And if we see a hot spot of death, which fortunately we have not had yet, we can get support to that area quick. In under 24 hours. Indiana National Guard has been really great with this, along with all the other partners that I mentioned. And being able to watch this has helped. We're fortunate. We also have a bureaucratic process here in Indiana that I will tell you helps suppress that possibility of happening right now. When someone dies, they can be released to the funeral home immediately unless the coroner is involved, the county coroner. And generally the release from the county coroner to the funeral home happens within the first 24 to 48 hours after death as well. So you won't have this accumulation of deceased bodies in institutions. They will matriculate out to the funeral homes and the communities that should be caring for them. So we've been fortunate. Doesn't mean that we're out of the woods. It doesn't mean it can't happen here, but we've been watching this from day one. And while we've seen the uptick and the surge in positive cases, you have not seen the uptick and surge in death. In fact, if anything, death has kind of tapered off. That's a good thing, but it doesn't mean that we just simply can't let our guard down. We have to be ever mindful of this.
And I think probably you'll agree with me on this, that this probably just emphasizes how important it is to plan for what we will all eventually go through and make sure your plans are in place.
Yeah. I've been a licensed funeral director in Indiana since 1996, and I haven't practiced actively since the beginning of 2017, but I can tell you this through the years of caring for my community and watching my dad care for my community, having conversations about what you want doesn't mean you have to go down to the funeral home and tell them, but I would encourage you to do that, and there's some financial incentive that will greatly benefit your family if you do that, but at bare minimum, have conversations. And I think unconsciously people are already having those. I mean, I can remember sitting around tables and because of what my dad does for a living and what I do for a living, we can't hardly go anywhere with someone doesn't bring up the topic of funeral service. And people talk about this oftentimes very with some jovial nature in their voice, you know, hey, when I die, I want this to happen, or I want to have a party, or, you know, what have you. I mean, they kind of reveal their personality and what their wishes are for their funeral. You got to talk. You got to talk to the people you love. The greatest gift you can give the people that you love is just to let them know how you think and how you feel. But you have to remember something when you do that, that the funeral ceremony is for the living. It's for them to come to terms with this change that has happened, to recognize your significance in their life and give them an opportunity to mourn. We live in such a fast world today. I think we forget that. And mourning is healthy. Mourning is normal. Death is normal. The circumstances that maybe caused the death aren't normal. But the death of our body is, in fact, is supposed to happen. And therefore, we have to be mindful of that. We also have to be mindful of those that we leave behind, that their needs get met, because they're the ones that have to move on. They're the ones whose lives have forever changed. And so having those conversations, it's not dark. It's not bleak. It's normal. It's healthy. And I encourage people to do that.
Andy Clayton with the Indiana Funeral Directors Association. They've got a great website with lots of information on it if you'd like to learn more. We appreciate Andy joining us today. And if you missed any part of our conversation today, just go to our station's website, and it's posted for you there as a podcast. We'll see you next weekend.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.